Sticking with the bird themed NFL teams here as we bring in our next guest on the Wester Hotline. It's Sean Stepner. He's a sports reporter over at WMAR. It's an ABC affiliate in Baltimore and former Western New Yorker. First things first, Sean, we will not be talking about Jack Eichel. I want to just put that on the table now. My producer has a very quick finger, and he will hang up on you if you try to bring up a Jack Eichel trade to Washington. I just want to let you know. It's off the table. So.
Well, you know, I'm a hockey guy at heart, so I might have to sneak it in there, but maybe we'll do it toward the end.
That's
so
right.
When you dump me, I fill what you need first, and then, you know, I'm gone.
That's fair. That's fair, man. At least we can get some of the Ravens talk out of the way, and then, you know, I can hang up on you at the end of the show. I think that's more respectful for both of us. Sean, you know, I think the Ravens are entering into, I think, one of the most consequential seasons of, like, this era that they're in. And I'm sort of wondering what you think the outlook is, because they've taken steps in the right direction at the wide receiver position, which is what everyone around football might be looking at to say, like, yeah, like, this is what they needed. But in order for them to make the room, or really, frankly, just in order for them to do the things they did at wide receiver, they sacrificed some positions on the defensive side of the ball, particularly the defensive line, letting Yannick Ndoukwe, you know, ultimately go on in free agency to Las Vegas. And that's a defensive line last year that was sort of the heartbeat of that whole team, not just the defense. So I'm wondering, they got better at wide receiver, but how consequential can any receiver really truly be in a Greg Roman system that is pretty limited to the receivers and passing game? And how much are they going to miss what they had on the defensive line last year?
All right, so let's start with the Roman Ravens offense and how productive they want to be. Look, everybody knows, and Bills fans obviously know, about Roman's style, and he's a run-first guy, heavily involves the tight ends, and, you know, that's what Baltimore has been throughout their franchise history, really. I mean, they've been a run-first, ground-and-pound offense. Now, will that offense survive and thrive, really, in today's NFL? I mean, you need to be able to pass the ball. You need to be able to stretch the field. So that being said, look, they added Rashad Bateman in the first mm-hmm. round. They added Sammy Watkins, another guy that Bills fans are well aware of, as a veteran presence. They have the young guy Marquise Brown, who's another first-round draft pick. Those three guys, Brown, Bateman, and Watkins, all former first-round picks. I mean, you add James Prochet and Devin Duvernay, Tylan Wallace from this year, Miles Boykin from a couple of years ago. Those are all guys that the Ravens have drafted over, like, the last 3 years to play wide receiver and some special teams. So, I mean, they're heavily invested in wide receiver. You know, it's on Lamar Jackson now to improve as a passer. This is the last-ranked passing offense in the league last year. So that's where they have to improve. Specifically outside the numbers and deep for Lamar, but they're definitely invested on the offensive side, specifically at wide receiver, getting younger and getting some more weapons for Lamar. Now, on the defensive side, I don't know if Yannick Ngakoue is as big of a loss for the Ravens as Matthew Judon
sure.
is.
Yep.
He goes to New England. But, you know, that's kind of, over the last few years, that's kind of been the Ravens' MO. I mean, they let their high-priced free agents, I mean, especially on defense, they let them go, they draft better, and they rely on Don Martindale, the defensive coordinator, mm-hmm. Who has a lot of respect around the league and has proven himself, has a good track record. They rely on him to scheme it up, and it really has worked in recent years. I mean, this franchise has been known over the years, as long as they've been around, as a running team and a good defense. And that's how they're going to win. That's sure. how they're going to win going forward.
I guess, you know, a good follow-up question to that is this whole Julio Jones situation, I think, is overall pretty interesting, especially from afar. I'm not sure. Listen, should the Bills be interested in Julio Jones? Absolutely. Should they do what's necessary to go and get him? I'm just not sure it makes sense for them, even though they are in this, I think, really interesting like Super Bowl window, and you can't exactly say that about a lot of teams. I mean, you could say they're in a playoff window and a win now window. I'm not sure many teams get to be quote unquote like in a Super Bowl window. I think the Bills are that. I also think the Ravens are that. So I think those are two teams that make a lot of sense for Julio Jones. If the Ravens are to go out and get a Julio Jones, how do you justify that in the same sort of breath we're talking about this passing game situation, where as a Lamar Jackson fan, I'm just not sure this is the type of offense where you could have four receivers like Julio Jones, Rashad Bateman, Sammy Watkins, Hollywood Brown, and really be able to utilize them all to their strengths, considering it's just not... Again, this is not a Lamar Jackson critique. It's more of a Greg Roman critique. But I just wonder how a Greg Roman could use a Julio Jones. And do you believe that kind of move would be worth the, you know, value in return you'd have to give up to acquire a Julio Jones based on who they've already acquired to sort of give that room a sort of boost in the arm?
I just don't think that that's the way that the Ravens operate. And they haven't over the years. I mean, you look at their general manager, up until 3 years ago, it was Ozzie Newsome. That was the only general manager the Ravens had. And then, you know, Eric DaCosta takes over. Eric DaCosta has been with the Ravens since day one. Since day one, when they got to Baltimore, Eric DaCosta was a scout, and he worked his way up to, you know, the top assistant for Ozzie. And then he took over for Ozzie. And he's a little bit more aggressive than Ozzie Newsome was, but it's just not how they operate. I mean, they value the draft and draft capital as much as any team in the National Football League, really. And I just don't think they're prepared to give up what it's going to take to land a Julio Jones and then add on to that what they've already dedicated, like I mentioned before, to the wide receiver group going into this season. Look, I mean, were the Ravens interested in Julio Jones? Look, I mean, define interested. I mean, who's not interested
in
at least thinking about adding Julio Jones, right? Did Eric DaCosta make a call? He probably did. Was that call specifically to try and work out and hammer out a Julio Jones trade? I don't think so. Was it to maybe inquire about what it would take and kind of compare and contrast what both teams are looking at going forward? Maybe. But GMs have these all the time. And so, you know, I'm sure the Ravens kind of kicked the tires at one point. Who wouldn't?
Right.
But I think once we got past the draft and you look at how this roster is built, I just don't think that – I could be wrong, but I don't think come next week, come the week after – we're talking about Julio Jones in purple in Baltimore.
You know, I think the next phase of like our conversation probably does need to move into Lamar Jackson territory, because like Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson and the Ravens are sort of, I don't want to say in a standoff, because I don't think that's right to term it that way, but I do think they're in a really interesting position, right? Like, I think it's safe to say Josh Allen is probably going to be in the conversation for like Dak Prescott money. I think Lamar Jackson has earned the right to be talked about in that realm of the Dak Prescotts, of the Josh Allens, and, you know, some of the top passers in the league that are going to be making, you know, $35-45 million a year, which is, or the Patrick Mahomes, right? Like, that's the kind of money players like that get paid. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are. Like, what are the Ravens' appetite for paying him that type of money, even when we haven't quite seen him develop as the passer, maybe to the level that would warrant that $35, $40 million contract? Are they, I guess the question amongst this is, are they sort of banking on him not seeing his ceiling as a passer yet? And maybe they're paying for statistics, or they're paying for a ceiling that they haven't quite seen yet. And how risky is that?
Man, I mean, that's a lot of questions balled into one. It's like, what do you value, right?
Right.
Look, there's no denying what Josh Allen can do and can still get better. There's no denying what Patrick Mahomes can do. There's no denying what Dak Prescott can do. There's no denying what Lamar Jackson can do. And look, there's a lot to be desired in the passing game, and I've already gone over kind of where he needs to improve, but you know, when there might be a lot to be desired through the air, but no one in the NFL can do what Lamar Jackson does, right? I mean, would you agree? on the ground at least, changing the game, getting into open space, making something out of nothing. Sure, I mean, look, Josh Allen, he might be the closest. No, I mean, what he does on a weekly basis is, you know, that's Pro Bowl, All Pro level. Look, I mean, that's it, and he grew by leaps and bounds last year. I watched the Bills a lot. It helped that they were on prime time and they weren't playing, you know, the same time with the Ravens, you know? But look, how do I say it? Changing a game with just an improvised play when something breaks down, there's no one that can do it like Lamar at this point in the game. Do you want to pay for that? Knowing that he also is one of the hardest working guys out there, and just a truly good, down to earth human being. I mean, I don't think you're going to find one article, mainstream media or social media or even people that hate him as a player. You're not going to find one piece on the internet about how he wasn't a good guy.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you have to value that as well. I mean, at least I think. Maybe I'm old school. But, look, he's going to get paid, and anybody of his ilk is going to get paid top dollar, as will, you know, Josh Allen as well, you know, when the time comes. So, yeah, I mean, look, they're going to pay him. I don't think it's really a question. And I think they should pay him.
Yeah.
The question comes where, you know, the Ravens did this with Joe Flacco a number of years ago. I'm not comparing Lamar to Joe Flacco. I'm comparing how you build a roster around paying a quarterback that kind of money. That's what I'm comparing it. Don't get all hot bothered with this comparison. But I'm saying, like, after the Ravens won the Super Bowl, you know, Joe Flacco got that contract. And the Ravens struggled for a number of years after that because they didn't do a good enough job kind of building around him. But, you know, that's where the question is going to be after Lamar gets the deal.
We've got Sean Steppner here on the Wester Hotline. He's a sports reporter for WMAR, ABC affiliate in Baltimore. And, you know, kind of continuing on this conversation, I think the one other interesting, I don't know if I want to call it development, but as a Mark Andrews fantasy owner in several leagues, in 2019, us fantasy owners of Mark Andrews were rejoicing because he was very clearly the top target. He was doing things as a rookie and a first year, or a second year player that, you know, I don't think a lot of people thought was going to happen. I think he was a fifth round pick. Like, just a kind of, like, he had the sort of start to his career that not many day three picks have in the NFL. But that offense, to your credit and to your point, you know, functions and flows through, particularly the passing offense, through the tight end position. So with the addition of a Bateman and a Sammy Watkins, what are you sort of expecting? Listen, Mark Andrews had a down year last year, even though his numbers were still pretty darn good. The underlying numbers were anyways. I just wonder, is he still, with all these new additions to the passing offense, is he still kind of de facto number one target for this offense still?
Yeah, I think so. And I think he's going to benefit from them getting, you know, look, we still don't know what type of players these guys will be, right? I mean, we don't know what Bateman will be. We don't know really if Marquise Brown's going to take it up another level. I mean, it all relies on Lamar and the passing game and the scheme and what have you. I mean, that's what makes the NFL great. But yeah, I think Mark Andrews, I think he'll get a little bit better. You know, a lot of his production, look, in 2019, that's another thing that people talk about with Lamar. You know, he took a step back. You know, you're going to take a step back after that in 2019 season. I mean, that was historic level offense there from a run perspective anyway. And the Ravens were just like blowing out teams and pouring on points. And Lamar was like the biggest thing. He won MVP. And Mark Andrews was a big part of it. Hayden Hurst was a big part of it too. I mean, they had Andrews and Hayden Hurst. And, you know, they shipped Hurst to Atlanta. And, you know, Nick Boyle took a bigger role. Now, last season, Nick Boyle got hurt. And so, you know, you have a little bit of issues with the tight end. So, look, I think Mark Andrews, he might still be the number one target. Yeah, I would go as far as to say that. And I think he will take another, maybe a step forward in 2021.
The other guy I think is maybe the most interesting, and we're, you know, I'm kind of looking at this from a fantasy perspective, but J.K. Dobbins enters into a situation that, you know, he looks like he'll be the, you know, the de facto number one running back. I know this team likes to use multiple running backs. Mark Ingram, I think, often underappreciated as a player. A lot of injuries that he battled through last year, I think, you know, his lack of presence in the lineup, I did think led to some of the issues that they had in the running game. But J.K. Dobbins, to me, really is, he's that young, dynamic playmaker. I'm pretty excited to sort of see what his outlook is this year. Are you expecting, you know, Buck Allen to still sort of get a lot of carries, or is this going to be the J.K. Dobbins and Lamar Jackson show in the backfield?
It's J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards.
Gus Edwards, yes. I'm sorry. Gus Edwards, yes.
Yeah, it's okay. So, you know, Mark Ingram, they let go. He's with the Texans now. Look, before last season, I was asked by somebody, you know, who's going to be like the surprise name, or, you know, maybe the, not the unsung hero, but who's going to have a breakthrough performance in 2020. And I immediately thought J.K. Dobbins, and he did. I mean, he came on strong through the. They weren't just going to give him the job, especially when they have Mark Ingram there, who's a respected veteran. And Mark Ingram, you know, slowly took a backseat to J.K. Dobbins, and J.K. Dobbins is elusive. I mean, he is the guy that you saw at Ohio State. It has transitioned to the pro game, and yeah, I mean, I think he's going to have another big year. His numbers are going to go up. He knows what the NFL game is all about. And I think it is definitely the Dobbins and Jackson show on the ground. And don't sleep on Gus Edwards. Mm-hmm. All that guy does is pick up first downs. And as long as the Ravens aren't facing a goal to go with Teron Johnson out there, they should be fine in 2021.
Bravo, my friend. Bravo. I am going to go against my better judgment, and I'm going to talk a little hockey with you for the next, like, 2 minutes. Washington is at a really interesting crossroads. I don't want to say crossroads, because I still think regardless – has there been a better long-term contract to ever play out than like Alex Ovechkin? When somebody signs a 10-year, a 7-year contract, it's done almost knowing they'll never see the end of that contract. And I think Alex Ovechkin is one of those rare people that not only was that contract worth it, you could almost make the argument that it was a value, like that they really kind of got way more out of that contract than even Alex Ovechkin did. But he's a free agent at the end of this year. Wondering, sort of, you know, in the breath of this Jack Eichel talk, is there a sense there in Washington that there needs to be a move made in order to help them maybe get the most out of Alex Ovechkin's last couple of years and maybe at the top of his game? I'm not saying Ovechkin is, like, you know, in the dog days here or anything, but he is on the back end of a career that is one of the best ever. He's going to end up being probably one of the best scorers of all time. But is there a sense that a move needs to be made to pair him with someone that maybe gives them an opportunity to win another cup or two?
Yeah, definitely. The talk, and as you saw in the Bruins series, that just ended, the Caps, for a couple of games, they looked old. Their window is open, but, you know, it's closing over the next 2 years. I mean, they're still – their best players are still – Backstrom was their leading scorer, Ovechkin, John Carlson, who's not old, but he's not young anymore. They're one of the oldest teams in the National Hockey League. And, you know, the sense is that there needs to be a legit hockey trade. A lot of fans, and I think in the front office as well, that might revolve around Evgeny Kuznetsov, who has made some questionable decisions. Let's put it that way. Off the ice, being on the COVID list a couple times, then, you know, going into the playoffs without Kuznetsov and Samsonov because they were dealing with, you know, being on the COVID protocol, that really, I think it really hurt them. You know, you want to be rolling when you hit game one and you drop the puck for the playoffs, and they just weren't. They were also dealing with injuries, but everybody's dealing with injuries. But that being said, look, the Caps, they had a lead in game two. They lost it late, and they lost in overtime. They hit two posts. Game three, double overtime, a bad play by Samsonov behind the net, and the Bruins, you know, they take that game, and you know, game four was a stinker, and game five happened. Game five, they were right in it. That's the playoffs, man. That is the playoffs. But yes, I think that it doesn't necessarily revolve around getting the most out of Alex Ovechkin and doing it for Ovechkin to prioritize his final years. I mean, let's face it, he's not going anywhere. He's going to re-sign with the Caps. But I think it's really to keep this window open and keep this team among the best in the NHL.
Yeah.
I think they need to change something, because a couple years ago, after the Cup, you know, it was two straight exits, and it was on the coach. They fired the coach to bring in Laviolette, and now it's on the players, because it happened again.
Oh, so you're saying it's not always the coach's fault? Well, in the instance of the Sabres, my friend.
Oh man.
It has. Brutal. Listen, dude. You covered this town, and you know that even when the Bills are at the very best, this still remains a hockey town at heart. And where this organization and where Terry and Kim Pegula are sort of over on their watch have let this thing go to. You know, I was on with Bulldog yesterday, filling in for Mike, and you know, it's. It's troublesome. It's worrisome. I'm running out of good words to use, but
it's
like
sad.
They are close to
it's
losing
sad.
This thing, man. Like, and in a way that, you know, I'm worried about, you know, next season, about ticket sales. Dude, I mean, this is a town that watches hockey regardless of how bad it is. Their national, like their TV ratings have been number two for the better part of a decade, and their TV ratings are down 38%, Sean. As a former Western New Yorker yourself, I'm wondering what your take is on, like, just how dire and maybe how the rest of the league is looking at this situation.
Yeah, you know what it is? It's sad.
Yeah,
that's
it
what
is.
It is. It's just a sad state of affairs. But maybe I'm an eternal optimist. Look, I mean, it's really hard. The law of averages, right?
Right.
You're due, but you've been due for so long. Look, winning cures all ills, that's easy to say. But, yeah, I mean, it took too long to get rid of Kruger, obviously.
Way too long.
Look, the hockey and then the NHL is way better when Buffalo's good. I know the passion for hockey. It's why I was so fired up to work there and get a job there originally. And I still miss going to the rink, being early to the rink. At First Niagara Center, what is it, KeyBank Center now?
Yep, KeyBank.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I still miss going, you know, going there and seeing a clean sheet of ice before practice, right? I mean, but look, I mean, it moves. You talk about the Caps needing to change it up. I mean, moves need to be made. You got to get people that want to play passionately for the Sabres and wear those now beautiful royal blue jerseys. And it doesn't seem like Eichel wants to. Doesn't seem like Ristolainen wants to. But really, Eichel. And look, I mean, a guy like everybody's going to want to propose a trade for Jack Eichel. It might be tough to hear, but you know, if you can swing an Eichel and get some really, you know, high picks and good prospects, I think it might be a tough pill to swallow, but it might be the right move. And just kind of maybe blow it up, start it over, and you know, it's really hard to miss the playoffs as much as Buffalo has missed the playoffs in recent years, the last decade. So, you know, just maybe start it over and get some new blood in there and build around Cousins and whoever you get for Eichel, maybe. I mean, I don't know.
It's the what I guess the overall concerning part is knowing that this team has put themselves in a situation where there's almost no way to win from an Eichel trade or from a Reinhardt trade. You know, no other team's going to truly give you the value that you know you deserve back because they know the position you yourself have put the Sabres in. You know, like and this is not Kevin Adams' fault, by the way. Kevin Adams has inherited just an absolute tire fire, and you know you feel bad for the guy, and this is an organization that has a handful of hockey operations people. It's frustrating, and more than anything, I think you put it best. She's just kind of sad. But hey, man, I appreciate you hopping on as always. Thanks for making time in the long holiday weekend. Always love having you on. Always love love your insight, and looking forward to probably hashing it out at some point in the NFL season when that Ravens Bills matchup comes across.
Anytime. Thanks, Nate.
My pleasure. Sean Stepner there of WMAR in Baltimore. It is the ABC affiliate up there.